It's 8:20. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, 5 years ago, after the resignation of Ray Timothy, the Park City Board of Education welcomed Amber Conley to town. Now she has packed up her desk at the school district office and making the transition to her new position as superintendent of Arizona's largest school district in Mesa. She joins me now for a final interview of her tenure here in Park City. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So your contract really doesn't end for another 6 weeks, and yet you're out the door? How come?
You know, as the board looked at when I submitted my letter of not renewing my contract, they looked at timing, of course. Through encouragement of conversations, wanted to help them find a replacement for me. As they saw the timing of finding a replacement, working with the consultants, they felt it was in the best interest to put an interim in just because of wondering when they would be able to get a replacement. So that would be anywhere from, you know, July the 1st to maybe January 1st. And so knowing that I had accepted another position in another district and knowing that I was going to be transitioning, concluded that collectively we would put in an interim for the remaining of the year.
Yeah, but I guess, I mean, why not just finish out the school year, which would have been June what?
Right. Last day of school is June the 6th. Graduation is June the 1st. You know, I think one of the complexities was the Mesa Public School superintendent, his last day is May the 25th. And so they, you know, they had requested any time that I could be there to please be there. And it's been really helpful for me to be able to start transitioning, spending time with him, the team, and then preparing, of course, for the summer and the gear up of 2018-19 school year.
So are you responsible for anything in the Park City Schools at this point?
Right. So basically on call. So if there's anything that they need, for instance, a couple days ago, they needed some documents around some safety issues. So it was, here's my computer, here's everything I've ever, you know, done. And so, you know, it's very collaborative. It definitely, there's not any tension between me or the interim. And I want the school district to be able to keep moving forward with the momentum that we started. You know, I look back on the tenure and we've been able to do some great things together. The team and myself working in improving early childhood education, expanding our preschool, all day K, looking at some of the programs we've put in the elementaries, you know, dance specialists at Parley's Park, looking at the accolades from the French and the Spanish embassies for our dual language, the coding program, and then looking, of course, as it moves up the ladder to our graduation rate. You know, it really shows that the work that we were doing collectively was helping students.
So when you got here 5 years ago, I mean, really, what was your what did you set out to do? Because this was your first superintendent position.
Wow, did I learn a lot. And I think, you know, that is something I have to show gratitude for with the Park City community. It was my first superintendency. And while, you know, I'm starting my 22nd year in public education, I have learned so much about leading a high-profile district. And I think that was one of the things that is I interviewed for Mesa Public Schools that put me ahead of some of the other candidates was I have been a leader of a high-profile district, a role model for the rest of Utah, and that when you look at the size comparison, leadership is often the same regardless of the size. So when I set out, I would say that specifically looking at national frameworks of what we know that students need to be college and career ready, and that's third grade reading, eighth grade math, 11th grade English proficiency, high school graduation. But wrapped in all of that is our social emotional learning for our students. And, you know, I'm really pleased while we have a long way to go in every community and looking at some of the very specific issues of Park City, the support for mental wellness and mental health is at the forefront of everyone's mind.
So, you know, I guess a good mark of success is whether you left a place better than better shape than you found it. Do you think you've done that?
I do. I certainly have tremendous respect for Dr. Timothy and all the former superintendents. But I think that walking into Park City, having maybe a different viewpoint, a different lens of a national viewpoint. And I think that oftentimes that change was really difficult. You know, when we looked at putting in professional learning communities, that was something that's been around since the late 90s, and that was somewhat unheard of in Park City, you know, in the 2015, 20, you know, even currently. So, you know, you look at the work that we've done, and I go back to my administrative team. They are the best administrative team I've ever worked with. They're dedicated. They're loyal. They want good things for kids. And let's face it, this is a highly engaged community that has high expectations, and the work that they do each and every day is to be congratulated.
So do you expect we'll see an undoing of some of those things that were done? I mean, a lot like we've seen on the national level with President Trump and undoing some of Obama's.
You know, I think that one of the things that's important is that when you follow national trends and using, you know, you hear these buzzwords, research-based practices, that some of that stuff you do because it's really good for kids. So, you know, I think that every leader will come in and make some changes. But I think the foundation that we've put in with professional learning communities, using data to make decisions, really focusing on each and every child, will continue.
Yeah. But when you look back, and anything that you kind of regret, and I guess what kind of comes to mind, my mind, is that whole PC CAPS building, putting the bond through.
Yeah, the bond, you know, it was a, the whole bond situation was a really, wow, did I learn a lot. And I think the board learned a lot, and I think the community learned a lot. And through it all, I think that there was a wake-up call. I mean, you heard it this morning from South Summit. Our community's growing, our kids are changing, and the way that we provide learning environments is a necessity. So, you know, we teach our kids this: through failure we learn, and I think through that failure we learned a lot. I would say, you know, looking back, I certainly have tremendous respect for the board that went through that bond. But I think the community definitely wraps around the learning environments and the school buildings itself. I think the athletic piece of it kind of threw the community for a curve. But the assessments that we've done on each and every building, as the board and the administration, new superintendent, moves forward with master planning, the amount of data that we have collected over the last 4 years is going to put them leaps and bounds ahead of being able to pass a bond.
Yeah. So would we have been better off to have built that PC CAPS building?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I continue to be a huge advocate for the CAPS program, really for a couple of reasons. And I'll use the comparison of looking at Mesa Public Schools. There is a lot of money and funds that go into career and tech ed, and there's both federal and state monies that support those programs. And when you look at how the economy is driving the jobs that our students need, the CAPS program is providing those skills that our students need. And I think it was also a pilot program to be able to look at what those environments should look like. And I would encourage our community to go do a tour of the new Farmington High School. It is going to serve 2,100 students. It's a project-based learning environment. You walk in, it's open, it's collaborative, there's conference rooms. And again, the shift is the teachers aren't in their rooms. The teachers have offices and huge conference areas where they can collaborate. So it's a shift, and it's working in many other districts. And I think that that's, honestly, I think that's where our community needs to go. We have to get out of our uncomfortable environments that we don't want to change and move in for what our students do.
Yeah. How has that worked out? Because that was another kind of controversial idea to basically we cut the Park City High School library and, you know, down by 2/3.
You know, it is definitely a trend. And we see it, you know, as we looked at our data of how many students were using our ebooks, because we had a partnership with our Northern Utah other school districts where we could use our ebooks, and the number of checkouts for ebooks, I mean, I'm going to say quadrupled. I'm just trying to go through the numbers in my head, comparatively to the hard copied books. So again, it's there's certain students that still like to be able to go to the library to go check out things, but that's not really how they use our libraries anymore. And it was for collaborative learning.
Yeah. And then in terms of graduation, are you going to be back?
I am planning on walking with the students. You know, I think it's really important not only in speaking with my staff members, but also for my closure. You know, in this group of kids, I started out with them at the high school, and I know several of them personally, and I think it's important. And especially the friendship and the professional and personal relationship that I have with Mr. O'Connor and his family and his staff. I'm excited to be able to take part in that with Mr. O'Connor.
Yeah. Will you also, will Bob and both you be speaking?
You know, Dr. Einhorn is going to be representing the high school. And then I haven't seen the program recently, but I do believe both the governing board president, Andrew Kaplan, and the interim superintendent will do the confirmation of graduation requirements.
So you'll just be sitting on the sidelines?
I'll be able to participate that way.
All right. Finally, just any advice to your successor?
You know, I'm going to use some advice that a mentor has given to me. And I love Park City, and we're keeping our home here and hope to retire here. And the community has been so supportive in some areas. But it is a very engaged, high-expectation community. And being able to have a unified board, and I see more of that each and every day, that this board is becoming more unified, and their dedication to trying to be the best that they really can be, working directly with the superintendent and letting that superintendent do what he or she needs to do, and that's administrate the workings and execution of the district. You know, and I do have to say thank you to all of our partners and the friendships that I've made along the way and the learning that was allowed for me to really take this next position.
So since you're keeping the house, you don't need a moving van then, huh?
I don't this time.
Okay. Yep, I am. And when does that actually happen?
Well, that's an interesting question. So there's lots going on personally in my life. So I would say July the 16th is really probably the last time that I'll be able to be visible often in Park City.
Okay, well, good luck to you, Amber. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie, and thank you for this opportunity.
That's the outgoing superintendent of Park City Schools, Amber Conley. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. 8:34 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Better Boundaries campaign wants to create a more responsive, transparent, and accountable redistricting process. Supporters have collected thousands of signatures, have sent them on to the Lieutenant Governor's office for certification. In the studio with an update, I have Park City resident and a supporter of the ballot initiative, Jeff Wright. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So again, how and why are you associated with this Better Boundaries movement?
Well, I'm one of the co-chairs of this bipartisan effort to create an independent commission that will have the first crack at the maps to draw the districts in a fair, transparent, and logical way that we believe is going to create a better process.
Yeah. So are the final signatures certified now for the ballot?
So we talked to all the county clerks, and we feel that there was no rescission campaign on our behalf. And we're getting word that over 150,000, which is well over the 113,000, have been certified. So we feel very good that the Lieutenant Governor on June 1st is going to verify that we're going to be on the ballot.
So no signature packages showing up in some county like we saw with the Count My Vote movement?
No, we weren't. We didn't feel that there was any rescission campaign. And, you know, honestly, this is a theme that we've talked about a lot. We don't have a lot of opponents, Republican or Democrat or independent. It's kind of hard to argue against an independent commission. It's kind of hard to argue against transparency, and it's kind of hard to argue against an open process.
Well, I think I saw on the website 67% of Utahns say they do support an independent redistricting commission. So what does this independent commission look like?
The independent commission will have the chair is appointed by the governor, whoever the governor may be. You will have Democrats and Republicans and unaffiliated voters represented. And most importantly, you're going to have standards. So the standards are going to be enshrined in the law of Utah that you have to keep communities together. You have to try to keep cities together. You cannot use partisan data. You cannot have individuals on this commission that are running for office, have run for office, are associated with a political entity, or are working for a political entity.
So what do you think will change as a result of this, if anything?
Well, we think we're going to have better boundaries, but this is a Republican state, and it will probably remain a Republican state, but we think that we're going to have some better lines drawn. For example, Holiday is divided, and Moab is divided, Park City is divided, and maybe some of those lines will be readdressed, and more and a more logical layout will ensue.
Yeah, Park City, Summit County, as you know, were split into three state representative districts. But I guess it could be argued that the voice of three representatives is better than just one, especially if you don't agree with that one.
Well, we hear from a lot of mayors that they don't like that and that it's more difficult to be heard. It's more difficult to get notice from a representative or a legislator. So we're hearing from a lot of mayors across this state that they don't like the current process. So But I want to be very clear that we're not about an outcome. We're about a process. We want a better process. And whatever the outcome is, the outcome will be.
Yeah. Can you cite any other districts or any other states that have done something like this and the changes they've seen, if any?
Yes. Yeah, so there have been 18 states that have done this. They've created independent commissions. Voter turnout has increased. Voter satisfaction has increased. And, you know, the states have, I think, drawn better boundaries that represent the people and the will of the people. I don't know if you know this, Leslie, but we are the only major democracy in the world that allows our politicians to pick their voters. France, Germany, the UK, India, which is the largest democracy in the world, all have independent commissions. So we are certainly the exception in the world. So we feel like we're doing something that standardizes us with the world and where there is a movement in this country to move to independent commissions.
Yeah. And I think when we talked last time, I mean, I identified you as a Republican in this process. So, I mean, do we have any other, I mean, are there, is this movement, though, balanced between Democrats and Republicans or even independents in there?
Well, yes. I mean, we have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have independents who supported this. We had thousands of volunteers who came out. I mean, we have we received 190,000 signatures, 150,000, you know, verified and certified. That means you have to have Republicans in that. And again, you pointed the poll, 67% of Utahns support that. That means Republicans support it. We're expecting more legislators. We're expecting more Republicans to come out. I don't know if you heard, but the governor made some very positive comments and said he was very in favor of an independent commission. So we feel like this is a bipartisan effort that will continue to grow and build.
Because I think I did hear from a lawmaker, outgoing lawmaker at that, though, but basically saying that is the legislature's job is to set boundaries.
Well, and it'll still be the legislature's job because they will have to still vote on what the commission proposes, but they're going to be held to standards and they're going to have to, you know, vote up or down on the map.
Well, are there any ways for the legislature to kind of circumvent the outcome of this ballot initiative, like we have seen maybe with the medical marijuana collection?
We have not seen any opposition to this or any pushback on this to this date. And again, I think with the governor part of this process by appointing the chair and the governor making some very positive comments, I would be surprised if he would allow any manipulation of the legislation.
All right. So what happens from here? I mean, does it just basically go to the ballot?
It will go to the ballot. It'll be certified by the Lieutenant Governor's office on June 1st. And we have work to do to get out the message of why this is important, why redistricting reform is necessary in Utah. So we'll start a public campaign to get voters out in November.
Right. And you can do that kind of legally because you're a nonpartisan nonprofit organization or something?
Yes, we'll be holding town meetings, we'll be having forums, we'll be hitting the press, we'll be doing a public campaign, mailings, you know, the usual campaign avenues that we have open to us.
All right. And then the open house is just for people to come ask questions, find out what this means.
Absolutely. And we've had a lot of success with those.
Yeah. Need any volunteers?
Yes, we do.
And the best way to do that is just to go online?
Yes, betterboundaries.org.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
I think this is so important. You know, we're seeing this trend across the country where you don't have competition. You have divisive politics. And I think this is one of the solutions to fix many of the problems that we have. You know, more competition, more transparency, taking out conflict of interest. These are important. They're bipartisan. I think everybody can agree on it. And we're very hopeful that this will win in November.
Okay. Jeff, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a good day.
Jeff Wright again with the Better Boundaries campaign. 8:42, good morning. Well, as we've reported, the Wasatch Back Economic Summit was held earlier this week, hosted by the Park City Chamber Bureau, among others. Also, as to a look ahead at some of the community events coming up, I have Chamber Bureau Member Services Director Nancy Gray, along with Member Services Manager Heather Cook. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, so what kind of turnout did you guys get?
Oh, we had a fantastic turnout. We actually had a sold-out event. So we had over 300 people join us, and they were from businesses all over the Wasatch Back, Summit County, and Wasatch County. It was great.
Yeah. What were they drawn to, do you think?
You know, the program was designed to kind of bring the two communities together, and I think that really appealed to a lot of people. And the subjects varied from housing in the Wasatch Back to our transportation challenges to affordable housing. We covered a lot of really interesting topics that really span a really broad variety of businesses and people.
So are you going to make this an annual event?
Well, it's either going to be an annual event or a biannual event. We haven't really determined that yet, but we'll make that decision soon. But we definitely plan to do another one.
Okay. And then what's the response been, you know, to some of the speakers and breakout sessions that you brought in?
The response has been overwhelmingly positive. And we were super pleased about that because it is the first time that we've done anything like this. And everything that we've heard has been very, very positive. We heard a lot of comments from different people saying that it was great to open the dialogue between the two communities, and a lot of people are looking forward to the communication that's going to happen in the future.
Yeah. So was that the idea then?
Yeah.
I mean, to do this?
Yes, it was. And, you know, we share a lot of the same challenges. We're two totally different communities, but the two communities share a lot of the same challenges. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that we understand that and that we can work together to meet some goals.
Yeah. I know a lot of Park City people were there. Do you think yeah. it was balanced with Wasatch County?
I do. I don't have a count of, you know, what percentage was from Wasatch and what percentage was from Summit. But I can tell you there was a really broad mixture and it covered all industries. We had a lot of government people there as well, so it was great.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about that?
No, it was fabulous. Yeah. We appreciate everyone's support.
Yeah. Okay. And then what's coming up then?
Oh,
you got a bunch of events. I know you've got a social tonight.
We do. We have a really awesome social. We do a monthly business after hours mixer. It's hosted by one of our member businesses every single month. And this month, it is hosted by the beautiful DeGioia Center out in Camas. And it is tonight. We'd like to invite all Chamber Bureau members to join us and any prospective Chamber Bureau members. If you haven't attended a mixer with us before, we'd love to see you there. It'll give you a chance to see what we do and kind of how our mixers work. 5 to 7 out at the DeGioia Center. They're going to have a live music, special food from Chef Justin, beverages, prize drawings. It's going to be a great party.
And then a cash bar, or do they off?
You'll be given a drink ticket when you come in, and then I assume, I'm not positive, but I would assume after you use your drink ticket, they'll have a cash bar available.
Okay.
Yeah, that's up to them.
What else you got coming up?
Oh, gosh. The next biggest thing that we have is our Summer Activities Expo and Party, which is on June 5th at the Doubletree, and that is where we would like to invite the entire community to come out and visit over 30 expo booths to meet the companies in our community that do summer activities and events. So gear rentals, bike rentals, fly fishing guide services, events. KPCW is going to be there. It's just going to be great, and it's a great place to come and plan your summer.
Yeah, it's a big open house, and people tend to just come and go and just
Absolutely.
Can walk around and find out all the different things there are to do.
Absolutely. We're going to have food and a cash bar at that and then free food, but it should be really fun.
So you're looking for people to be part of the expo at this point?
Well, you mean as a booth,
mm-hmm.
at a table? So
yeah.
That was by invitation only, and it is for chamber members. And the reason that we did invitation only is we targeted the invitation specifically to our members who do activities and summer events. We love all of our members, and we want to give everyone an opportunity to promote their business. But we do another one of these expos for our winter businesses, and then we will also do another expo for our professional services. So everyone will have an opportunity to promote their business.
Okay. What else you got going on?
Well, we always have a ton of stuff going on. New member breakfast, we've started those back up again. So for new members, they're invited to come and learn about the chamber, learn about their benefits, how to use them, how to promote their business, and how to just take advantage of everything that we offer. The next new member breakfast is scheduled for June 19th. So anyone who is a new member, or even if your business has been a member for a long time, but perhaps you're new to your organization, you're welcome to come, because we really want everyone to understand their benefits and take advantage of them.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
What else should we mention? Anything that you would like to add?
Well, I was going to say, now we did see, I think Chamber did see like a drop in membership. So are you trying to rebuild that?
You know, membership is always the focus for us. I mean, we're a membership-driven organization. We have currently about 1,000 members, which is pretty much where we kind of hover. You know, we lose some members and then we gain some members, but our numbers are fairly consistent as we go along. So we're very fortunate to have such a robust organization and community that supports us.
Okay. Hey, Nancy.
So, yeah.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, we appreciate you having us. Thank you.
It's Nancy Gray, again, the Park City Chamber Bureau Member Services Director. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning. Well, Park City Municipal Corporation currently accepting submissions for artwork to beautify 10 Rocky Mountain Power utility boxes this coming summer. In the studio with details, I have Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's get you on the right mic there. So tell me, what are we doing here?
So this is a really exciting project. We've been working on this one for quite a while. This is in partnership with Rocky Mountain Power, as well as the Public Art Board in the city. And so what we are doing is we're actually looking for 10 pieces of art to wrap utility boxes, or some of those Rocky Mountain Power boxes that you see around town. This is somewhat of a pilot project, and so while we're hoping to wrap 10 utility boxes this summer, we're hoping that moving forward in future years, we'll continue to wrap a few more each summer. The reason why this project is so exciting to me is this is really one for the community to participate in. So we are focusing on artwork from the community. So whether you're a local artist, if you're a student in school, if you're a neighborhood that wants to put a proposal together, we're looking for various designs that help link to our sustainability efforts and to our energy priorities in the city. So it's also an important partnership between our sustainability department. And art is really a way to link to our critical priorities and top priorities in the community.
Mm-hmm. Anything in particular in terms of design that you're looking for?
So I think the important thing with this one is we are looking for two-dimensional artwork. That can be anything from paintings to drawings, mixed media, or photography. This is not one where we can accept three-dimensional artwork. The deadline for this project is June 1st, and you can just go online. We're actually going to work on getting something, I think, on our homepage so it's easier to find. But you can just go on there and find the information for what you need to do to submit. We are asking people that do submit to also give a little bit of writing to talk about how their piece relates to the sustainability goals. And then the 10 pieces that we'll select, we'll actually be paying $400 per artist that's selected. So we'll actually acquire those into our public art collection as well, and likely display those original pieces of art somewhere else in the community.
Okay, so who chooses?
So the Public Art Board chooses the artwork that is selected. We also have representatives from our sustainability team, Luke and Celia, as well as Rocky Mountain Power, and then ultimately City Council as well. And I do anticipate getting quite a few submissions for this one. Like I said, this is a project that we are hoping to continue in the future, and there might be other opportunities if we do get a lot of submissions to showcase all of the art that we do receive.
Yeah. So by wrapping them, that kind of protects it? Because I was thinking, man, if they're getting painted in a few years, they're going to look pretty haggard.
Yeah, and so we have done research. There's quite a few other communities that have done similar projects. And what we've learned is it's much better when we're actually going to take the artwork and digitize it and turn it into a giant wrap or giant sticker. And those last a lot longer. And so we are also accepting, we have an RFP out for printing services that will also be awarded the contract to print these and move forward.
All right. So kind of UV protected and things
Correct.
Like that. Yeah. And I guess it's like, you know, those are the kind of things that we just want to fade into the background. Now, doesn't putting these wraps on them just make them even more obvious?
I think it does. But I think, you know, I think energy is a critical priority. And I think art helps beautify our community and bring things to the forefront. So I'm excited. And I've been to a lot of communities that do this and they do stand out. But I think it's important. I think the locations we've chose, we're looking at locations on Kearns Boulevard, out at Quinn's Junction, over by the police station, and actually here on Sweet Alley as well. So I think some of the places there are places where a lot of people are walking around, and it'll be great to have some art out there.
Okay. Again, people can get more information online if they're interested in submitting something?
Yes, they can go to just parkcity.org and find information there. You're also welcome to email me if you do have questions. That's jenny.dearson@parkcity.org.
Okay. Again, June 1st is the deadline.
June 1st is the deadline. And if I can just mention really quick, I talked to Celia last night. She wanted me to remind everyone that the Watt Smart Communities Workshop is being held tomorrow at the library. That is from 9 until 12. Anyone can attend that. And what they're doing in that workshop is they're developing an energy efficiency plan for the community. And they would just love anyone to come and participate, and hope to see people there.
Okay. Jenny, thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
This is Friday and Saturday night. Repertory Dance Company returns to the Egyptian Theater. On the phone, the executive director and artistic director of RDT, Linda Smith. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to talk with you about our return to Park City.
Yeah, so we've got the same show on both evenings, or?
Yes, at 8 p.m., the Egyptian Theater.
Okay.
And we have a concert that has a lot of variety, both historical and contemporary works, group works, duet works, some humor, some beautiful dancing and throughout. Dramatic works, and one of those works that you go, wow.
So how many actual performances there are, you know?
Well, we're going to do some selected works of a historic choreographer named, pardon me, Michio Ito, and there are several short works of his. We're going to do a work by William Bill Evans, an alumni dancer, with RDT, and he created a wonderful work inspired by East Indian dancing and music called Tintal, and then a duet by another RDT alum, Sarah Donahue, filled with lots of humor, a brand new work by Francisco Gela, which is very dramatic, and then we end with Shapiro and Smith's Bolero. So that's quite a kind of a menu of work.
How many different dancers you got performing?
We are bringing our company of eight dancers. Okay. And they're very seasoned dancers, wonderful performer, wonderful strong technicians, and they have a lot of both pizzazz and warmth. They'll give a wonderful gift to the audience.
Okay, tell me, I mean, the repertory, I mean, what does that mean as a dance company?
Well, a repertory dance theater, a lot of people say, what exactly, you know, why are you calling it that? But the repertory is our library filled with lots of different dances, not books, dances. So we have created and performed over 400 dances in our 52 years. And represent dances from the turn of the 20th century to this year. So that's quite a span, and it's a very unique company. We're the only company in the world that really makes a commitment to preserving both our historic treasures and commissioning new work.
Yeah. Now, have you been with the company since its formation?
I have. I was a founding member in 1966. There were eight of us selected by the Rockefeller Foundation, dancers from Utah who had trained in Utah, and we were to experiment with a kind of unique new model, and we were really the very first successful modern dance repertory company in the country. So we're very proud of our heritage, our lineage, our legacy,
yeah,
and going strong.
Do you have a home theater?
Yes, we are in residence at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City, and we were actually the catalyst to get that center built. It's owned by the county, managed by the county now, but we really felt that we needed a theater especially for dance. We like intimate theaters, and so to perform at the Egyptian Theater is wonderful because we like to have a real kind of dialogue, a movement dialogue with the audience. We like them to be close and personal.
Yeah. How often do you get out on the road?
We tour about 6 weeks of the year, and this is kind of the wrap-up to our 52nd season. We love to perform in communities large and small. So we've seen a lot of wonderful rural towns and communities that we love to bring the best of American modern dance to those communities who sometimes don't have the opportunity to see live professional dance at this level, unless they go to the big centers of dance in New York City or Chicago or et cetera. So we're so lucky in Utah to have as much dance as we do. We're really a dance center. People know all over the world that Utah has made a commitment to the arts and the performing arts, and dance has been, I think, one of our most valuable assets throughout the years.
Again, two shows, Friday and Saturday night, both at 8 p.m. at the Egyptian Theater. Tickets start at $19. There are also some $10 student tickets.